We start today with warnings that some of rural Australia's most underprivileged and vulnerable people could be left with nowhere to live after the federal government revealed it will scrap an affordable housing scheme. The Social Services Minister, Kevin Andrews, will join me in just a moment to explain why the decision was made. But first, Ken Marchingo is the Chief Executive of Haven. It's based in Bendigo in central Victoria. Hi, Ken. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Cameron.
What services do you provide?
So firstly, it's Haven Home Safe. We provide an integrated housing and homelessness service, so everything from transitional and emergency housing right through to permanent long-term affordable housing for low-income earners.
Okay, so who does that include?
So it's people on pensions, people on benefits, people are on part pensions, part income, some people on very few, but some on low wages as well.
Okay, and across rural Victoria?
Across all of Victoria, but predominantly regional Victoria. Mm.
How will changes in the federal budget affect your services?
I think there's a number of ways that they'll be affected. The first thing is that people who are already in our housing will have less income, and that will translate to less rent. Now, we're one of the largest commercial borrowers of one of the major banks in Australia. I'm not talking about the big four, but I'm talking about the top six. And those borrowings, of course, are subject to all the normal banking covenants that you would expect, and our business is premised on a number of things, essentially identified by state governments. But so there's some concerns there. This is not going to send us to the wall, but it's going to make things even tighter.
So what you're basically, the people you provide housing for will have less income because there'll be cuts to welfare, is that
absolutely
what you're talking about?
Yeah, and that will flow through to rents. But the main issue, really, the main issue will be we already have an affordable rental crisis in this country. We just don't have enough housing available for poor people, and we're going to have people who will be losing, people at most risk, the most vulnerable, who will be losing in some cases up to 18% of their income. Admittedly, that's a small amount, but a small number of people who will lose that 18%. But, you know, if you're the person who loses 18% of your income, that's the difference between having somewhere to live and not.
Mm-hmm. Why exactly does a reduction in welfare payments mean that these people will pay less rent?
Well, for the state housing authorities, and I'm not sure any of the state housing ministers have picked this up yet, there's income-related rents. So the around about 4% of people in Australia who are in state housing authority housing, if their income goes down, their rent will go down. But state housing authorities are already on the edge of bankruptcy, in effect. And to lose more income, this is really transferring the saving from the Commonwealth to turning it into a cost for the state. And nobody wins about that. There's no net benefit for anyone here.
Mm. So that's how you're interpreting, a broad range of changes in the federal budget that relate to welfare payments.
That's just the top line as it applies to housing and a little bit around the edges of homelessness. But there's certainly more damage, I suspect.
But there was something called the National Rental Affordability Scheme,
yep,
that was due to have another round of funding or grants, if you like. How does that scheme work?
So it basically is a tax subsidy or a cash payment to investors to provide affordable rental housing for people on moderate to low incomes. And that cash subsidy or tax credit, partly funded by the Commonwealth, the majority funded by the Commonwealth, and a couple of $3,000 funded by the states. That enabled, when the intention was to get 50,000 rental properties on the ground. It's got three quarters of the way through. There's no doubt, and Minister Andrews will know this, and I would agree with him there. There's no doubt there has been some rorting around the edges on that. There is no doubt it has housed some students that ideally would have been housed in specific student accommodation. But at the end of the day, it's increased rental supply. And if people are being housed in new rental supply, it begins to take pressure off the market. Now, there's 10,000 properties that should have come into the marketplace that now will not come into the marketplace with the recent budget.
So what would organisations like yours borrow and build these homes for low-income people or vulnerable people, but there would be assistance from the Commonwealth government to make that a viable option? Is that essentially how it worked?
So the reason there's no affordable rental market in Australia is simply that it just doesn't stack up financially. So you need a subsidy product. Now, you need that subsidy on the way in, on the way out, or on the way through. And in this case, it was a subsidy that went on the way through for about 10 years. And certainly we have borrowed significant amounts of cash to put affordable rental housing properties on the ground.
What significant amounts?
Our total borrowings are well north of $50 million.
$50 million, that's all put into, all invested in affordable housing.
In affordable housing. So we've got a portfolio that's north of $300 million quite a significant amount of borrowing against that. Now, large amounts of that money that has been invested in that has come from the state, but, we're a not-for-profit who is happy to put our money where our mouth is. We're in this business to help people. We're not deriving a profit from this, and we're deeply concerned about the impact here.
So what will happen now that there is no fifth round of the National Rental Affordability Scheme?
What it means is there was an option to begin to reduce pressure in the marketplace around Victoria, around Australia, one imagines, and we cannot proceed with those plans, we cannot proceed with those options, and that just means that there's no real new supply coming in. We know state housing authorities are unable to contribute any meaningful new supply. Meaningful new supply has always come through the Commonwealth State Housing Agreement or the National Affordable Housing Agreement from the Commonwealth, and we've seen the Commonwealth apparently walking away from anything other than the absolute constitutional responsibility.
Is it fair to say it's a decision that means more homeless people in rural Victoria?
I believe so. People in rural Victoria do not necessarily lead the idyllic lifestyles that perhaps those in the city would like to think. They live further away from services. They earn less as a starting point. Their rental costs are often lower, but when you factor in heating, cooling and transportation costs that they often balance out or in some cases higher, you pay more for basic items. You travel further to get basic services. And if you're on a fixed statutory income, it just doesn't go far enough.
You're hearing there from Ken Marchingo, the Chief Executive of Haven HomeSafe. That's in Bendigo in central Victoria. Also with me is Kevin Andrews, who's the Federal Social Services Minister. Minister, thank you for holding on there. Appreciate it.
Good morning, Cameron.
Let's start with the National Affordability Scheme. Why was that cut?
Well, we looked at the National Rental Affordability Scheme when we came into government, and there are very many deficiencies in the way in which it had been operating and rolled out. This was aimed at providing, within a relatively short period of time, 50,000 new dwellings. Currently, there's only about 20,000 after a number of years that have been constructed. There's about another 18,000 that are at different stages of construction or maybe not even construction. On top of that, there was inappropriate use of the incentives, housing for international students at universities rather than for local workers and poorer Australians. And there's been a trading in the incentives, so much so that we know that some of these incentives are being traded on the open market for up to $20,000.
But are you scrapping the entire scheme because a few people rorted the system?
No, we're not. What we're doing is that for the 38,000 that have either been built or in the process, hopefully, of being built, we will maintain that scheme as long as the timelines for getting them built are in place. For the remaining 12,000, we're not proceeding with it at this stage because of those problems. In addition to that, we will be looking at housing in a much more holistic way at the Commonwealth level over the next 6 months or so. But this should be seen in the context of two things. Firstly, housing is primarily a state responsibility in Australia, but despite that, the Commonwealth provides billions of dollars to the states for affordable housing. We provide, under the National Affordable Housing Agreement, about $1.3 billion a year. We provide billions of dollars in rental assistance from the Commonwealth each year. And specifically for homelessness, we've rolled over the $115 million for 12 months while we have this examination of housing more broadly.
But do you agree with Ken Marchingo's assertion that this decision by the federal government will directly lead to more people homeless in regional areas, regional Victoria in particular in this case?
No, I disagree with that, because this was one measure and a relatively small measure in the total amount of money which the Commonwealth provides to the states and others for housing, and all we're not doing is proceeding with a measure. This is not going to lead to any further homelessness, and indeed, as I said, we've rolled over the $115 million that goes from the Commonwealth directly to homelessness funding whilst we have a look at housing more broadly.
The scrapping of this particular scheme is one of many changes in the federal government. Ken Marchingo made the point that many of the more vulnerable people in society will see their welfare benefits cut. Are you concerned, or how concerned are you, that the broad range of changes will put unfair pressure on society's most underprivileged people?
The Commonwealth is still maintaining very significant and substantial payments through the welfare system. The total welfare bill is about $145 billion. Much of that goes to families. If you take a single income family with a child under six, on the minimum wage. They're getting about $20,000 in addition in Commonwealth benefits, and that doesn't take into account things like childcare or rental assistance if they're in rental accommodation that is eligible for assistance. It doesn't take into account other things such as the subsidies for visiting the doctor, etc. If you take a single income family with $30,000 again, who have got two kids between, say, 6 and 12, they're receiving about $20,000. All the way up to about $90,000 or more, people are still receiving $5,000, $6,000 in additional funding from the Commonwealth.
So is the current level adequate, in your view, the current level of Commonwealth assistance to the most vulnerable people?
Well, our situation is that we found ourselves inheriting a total financial mess, $123 billion worth of accumulated deficits, $667 billion worth of Commonwealth debt if we don't do something about it, which means $25,000 worth of debt for every man, woman and child in Australia. Now, we have to address that, otherwise this is going to be a burden around the neck of the next generation.
Yes, but this is a question of how you address it and who ultimately pays for that debt.
That's right. And what we've done in relation to these things is try to ensure that all Australians make some contribution to the mess that we're in at the present time. But as I said, if you're on a minimum wage with a one or two or three children, you'll be receiving somewhere between about 20 and 30, even more, $1,000 from the Commonwealth in terms of direct family payments. So there is still a very significant contribution that the Commonwealth is making, but we've had to actually look at the overall situation, because at the moment we're in a situation where the previous government borrowed not for the future, but from the future.
But the question is not over the contribution, the dollar amount, the financial contribution the Commonwealth is making. The question is whether or not that people on the lowest incomes, single mums or low-income families or the unemployed, will actually see a real cut in what they receive from the Commonwealth and what that means for their living standards. Do you accept they will suffer a cut to what they get in their pocket?
Look, we acknowledge, and that's the basis of this budget, that we're asking all Australians to make a contribution. We've tried to be fair about that in terms of the contribution which they are making. You know, if the Labor Party was serious about this, they'd pass the carbon tax repeal now, which is a $550 per year benefit to the average family in Australia. We're not doing this because it's a popular thing to do. We're doing this because it's right for Australia and the national interest, because if we don't do it, then we face real problems. Today, the credit rating agencies have been saying that there's a danger that the credit rating will be reduced. What does that mean? On top of the $1 billion worth of interest that the Commonwealth is paying, if the interest rates are forced up, we'd be paying more interest, which means an even greater burden into the future. So as I said, this is not a popular budget in the sense that we're seeking, you know, people to say, yes, this is great, this is wonderful, we can keep on borrowing and spending. We're saying we've got a problem in Australia. People listening who run their own business, who run their own family household budget, know you can't keep on borrowing for the future.
Is there a risk that people living in regional and rural areas of Australia, where the services are already limited and the costs of living can be higher, that they are suffering unfairly with the cuts that you've made? They are bearing more of the cost than those people in the cities in Australia.
Look, I grew up in a rural area myself. You know, most of my childhood and until I left to go and study in a capital city was in a rural area. I know very much the experience of rural area. Most of my family still live in rural Australia. So we've tried to be fair to people right across this country, whether they're living in a suburban area of a capital city or they're living in a small country town somewhere across the country. But it's difficult because we inherited a mess.
Many of your National Party colleagues represent poorer electorates around Australia. What sort of reaction are they getting from their constituents?
Look, they understand the situation, whether they're National Party colleagues who represent rural areas or many Liberal Party colleagues represent rural areas as well. They understand that. We discuss these things in the National and Liberal Party room. People, I think, understand the problem we've got. And if we can start to get out of this problem with the plan we've got in place, then that means down the track in a few years' time, we can actually start to ameliorate some of the changes. But we're the only people with a plan at the moment to try and get out of this mess, and that's what we're proceeding with.
Kevin Andrews is the Federal Social Service Minister. Still with me is Ken Marchingo from Haven House Safe, from Haven Home Safe in Bendigo and Central Victoria. Ken, are you happy with the explanation you hear there from the Social Service Minister?
Well, look, I've met Kevin a couple of times over the years, and he's a decent bloke, but at the end of the day, he is a minister in the government, and he is a politician, and he has a view to put and a spin to put on it. The frank reality is Peter Whitford, who is an economist who worked for the OECD, has a glowing career in economic analysis, has come up with a set of numbers that quite specifically points to where individual family types lose money. And in every budget for years, there has been tables in the budget that says this is the impact on individual family types, and in this budget, funnily enough, it was missing. We know, and it's just a matter of recorded fact now, that for the people who've been analysing the budget, that there are clear income types, people on unemployment benefits, people on single parents, people on average wages, on the sort of base average wage, they're going to lose money here, and they're going to be worse off. And the real issue is that the pain, because nobody, Cameron, nobody, I don't think, in this entire nation actually expects that the budget problem will fix itself. I think everybody in the nation gets that there needs to be some heavy lifting. But you know, it ain't fair. It's disproportionately pushed to the people on pensions and benefits and the high income earners, $180,000 above. Let me just give you one example. Someone on $180,000 are going to pay, assuming they don't increase their superannuation or novate a car, they're going to pay $200 a year. So what, $600 over 3 years for this temporary deficit? Someone who loses their job, who's on an unemployment benefit, could lose $6,000 in a year, in 6 months. I mean, there's some numbers that just don't stack here. If you look at the impact of what a small family, say three kids, someone on, bit over 100% of average wages will lose in terms of taking those kids to get vaccinated, taking those kids to see the doctor, taking himself to see the doctor. Even if you get to the co-payment level and look at the reduction in their income, they're losing money. So, and that's going to hit harder in regional areas.
The Minister made the point that housing in particular is primarily the responsibility of the state. Do you now target your efforts to the state governments?
Look, constitutionally, I mean, let's get clear about where this came from. The states gave the Commonwealth their taxation powers in the Second World War so that we could fight a war. And in return, the Commonwealth said, well, we will return to you your money for your hospitals, your health, your education and your housing. But this has been a shared responsibility pretty much ever since. And, you know, it's just not sensible. It's not right. And it doesn't stack for the Commonwealth to suddenly go, oops, it's all got a bit too expensive, let's walk away. And the frank reality is there are many housing areas where there are free kicks for investors, where you could make change, where there would be no change in investor behaviour, and no one would really get hurt, that could have been targeted for revenue raising. And those things have been ignored. So these changes seem to be disproportionately pushed towards the poor.
Minister, just a final question to you. Is there any room for a rethink, particularly around the National Rental Affordability Scheme, or do you stand by the decision?
We will look at housing in the broad in the second half of this year, but can I correct a couple of things that Ken said? First of all, there are tables in the budget papers. In fact, I'm reading from them now. And if you take the single income family with a couple of children, at $30,000 worth of income, they're getting over $20,000 worth of
benefits. I think Ken's point is there was a particular type of table that had been in the budget since Peter Costello's days that has been taken out this time around. So no one will dispute that you can find the figures.
There are tables there. And, you know, for the person on $180,000 he's talking about, they're actually paying not just the excise, they're paying probably in the order of about $50,000 to $60,000 in income tax as well. So you've got to look at the totality of this. And also, you know, the point still is the Commonwealth is paying billions of dollars and, in fact, an increasing proportion of housing costs are being paid by the Commonwealth if you look at any sort of trend of this over the years.
Minister, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
Kevin Andrews is the Federal Social Service Minister. And Ken, thank you for coming on the program. Again, always nice to have a chat with you.
Cheers.
Ken Marchingo is the Chief Executive of Haven Home Safe. You are listening to Bush Telegraph. You're on RN.